It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, do you remember some of the picture books you read as a young kid? Books can stick with us as we grow up. We'll hear about a reading list for young people that includes titles on things like bullying awareness, discrimination, and empathy for people from different backgrounds. First, Green Bay Packers head coach Mike McCarthy is out. The team announced they were parting ways yesterday after what's being called an embarrassing loss at home to the Arizona Cardinals. McCarthy has led the team for the last 13 seasons, but the move comes as the Packers are approaching a second season without making it to the playoffs. Tom Silverstein is the Green Bay Packers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel. Tom, thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome.
All right, so they let him go. There's a handful of games yet to go in the season. Was this a surprise?
No, not really. I think it was probably a question of when it was going to happen and whether they were going to make the playoffs. I think they were leaning that way, but needed to see whether this team would rally in the last five games and make a playoff run. And then once they lost Arizona, it was pretty evident that, you know, they were going to make a change, that they're not going anywhere this year. And I suspect that everything that they had been thinking towards this point in the season was validated in that Arizona game, and they just decided to make the decision now instead of waiting around another month.
Yeah, sometimes you hear about teams having a statement game where they just do everything right and show who they really are, and this seems like the opposite of that. They had to win, basically, to make the playoffs. They're playing against one of the worst teams in the league, and I don't know, they didn't look like a team playing in those conditions to me as a, you know, non-hardcore football guy.
Yeah, and their quarterback didn't play like it was a must-win game either. It was all around a bad effort, and when you can't beat a 2-9 team that's, you know, from the West Coast and warm weather city and has lost five of its last six games, and you lose at home and you play that pathetically on offense, that is a statement. There's no question that's a statement. And whether it was Rodgers' final salvo into saying he didn't want to play with McCarthy anymore or what, I don't know. But it definitely sealed his fate.
Not a great season, obviously, for the Packers. How much do you blame a head coach in this situation? How much can you blame Mike McCarthy for what the team has done this year?
Well, the head coach, ultimately, everything funnels to him. And the head coach is responsible for the record. And, you know, unless there's a catastrophic number of injuries, which they did not have this year, they had some, but not terrible. They had their quarterback the entire year. Then, yeah, a lot has to go to him. But, you know, the players have to perform, and then you have to have the right amount of talent. And they're a team that's in transition. They, you know, fired their general manager last year, and so their new general manager is sort of shaping the team in his vision. But it's not a one-year project. It's a several-year project. And McCarthy got caught in that transition game where he didn't have that much talent, and then he didn't do as good a job as he could have managing that talent. And then Rodgers just had a terrible season. I mean, all the way around, just did not perform like, you know, a great quarterback.
Looking at McCarthy's career, you look at his win-loss record, it's really good. He's won a Super Bowl with the team, lots of playoff appearances. Is that not enough when you have a quarterback, like a Hall of Fame guaranteed quarterback like Aaron Rodgers all that time?
Well, I think people become spoiled with success, and they expect Super Bowls at some point, you know, and they look over at New England and they see the Super Bowls being won over there or having been won previously, and that's what they want. And they see the quarterback and they believe that he should be winning more Super Bowls. But, you know, when you look at the reality of it, you can take a look at New Orleans, for instance. They've got a Hall of Fame quarterback in Drew Brees, and their coach was hired the same year McCarthy was, and they both have won Super Bowl. And basically, they've been about the same kind of a team. But for whatever reason in Green Bay, they are really hard on their coaches. And then in this case, too, the quarterback has had trouble getting along with the head coach. And ultimately, the highest paid player in the league wins out over the head coach.
Talking to Tom Silverstein from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He covers the Green Bay Packers, looking at the dismissal of Green Bay Packers coach Mike McCarthy midseason. Tom, you don't just slap a classified ad in the paper and go to monster.com for a job like this. Talk about the process.
Well, I think their process is flawed, but what they plan to do is the president, Mark Murphy, is going to lead the search. And he's going to make the final decision on the head coach. And many organizations, the general manager does that. And the general manager is someone steeped in football. I mean, he's a guy who's out on the road scouting players, talking to college coaches, talking to other scouts. He knows assistant coaches around the league. He has many connections in different places, things that the president doesn't have. Now, Murphy says he's going to lean heavily on Brian Gutekunst, the general manager, but ultimately it's Murphy's decision. And from that point on, that coach, his boss is Murphy, not Gutekunst, and that can create some real problems.
Now, Packers fans are not used to new head coaches very much. There's that little interim between Holmgren and McCarthy. Should we expect quick changes starting next year with a new head coach in place?
Yeah, I mean, you'll see probably a different team. I don't know what's going to happen with their defensive coordinator and some of those assistants on the defensive staff. There's some really good guys on that staff that they need to keep, and the offensive line coach is someone they need to keep. But anytime a new coach comes, he has probably a different type of a system. He might want different types of players than what you have physically. And so you'll start to see a difference, a noticeable change next year. The question is really how long does it take him to implement his system and then get it up and running to where you're a competitor. It can take 2, 3, 4, 5 years before you're ready to win a Super Bowl. So we'll have to see how that goes.
And briefly in our last few moments, Tom, another unfamiliar position for the Packers. They're basically, I think, out of the playoffs. How do they use these last games? Are they, auditioning the younger players, seeing what they have maybe for next year?
I mean, in my mind, I think that's what they should do, but I'm not sure that that's what they're going to do. I think they probably will play everybody as though the season were still going. Now, they're not officially eliminated right from the playoffs, as far as I can tell. So there is a slim chance the slimmest of slim chances they could make the playoffs. So I'm pretty sure they'll use that as an excuse to play everybody. But I really would, if I were them, and they may start to think this as the weeks go on, that they're going to start looking at some of the younger guys and try to develop them and see where they are for next year.
Tom, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome.
That was Tom Silverstein, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's beat reporter covering the Green Bay Packers. He was with us to talk about the firing of head coach Mike McCarthy and what comes next for the team. Coming up, we'll hear about some of the best titles in kids' literature on things like bias, diversity, and social justice. That's coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, got questions about why WPR does what it does the way it does it? You'll have your chance to ask WPR Director Mike Crane in the December edition of Mondays with Mike. Right now, do you remember some of the books you read growing up? Whether it was a favorite picture book you read over and over or a book on a reading list maybe in middle school, some books just have a lasting impression. The Anti-Defamation League has suggestions on great books for kids today that will make that lasting impression and help them feel empathy for people from different backgrounds. A sample of the few of the titles on the ADL's Books Matter list: I Dissent, Ruth Bader Ginsburg Makes Her Mark, for 6 to 10-year-olds, a book for ages 7 to 12 about children immigrating from Central America called We Are Like the Clouds, or What Can a Citizen Do, for ages 4 to 8. Laura Trubowitz is the Education Director for the Anti-Defamation League Midwest. She joins us to talk about the ADL's Books Matter Children's Literature List. Laura, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, as you at ADL rounded up all these books, what kind of things were you looking for to make the cut here?
Yeah, sure. You know, we look for four general things. One is we're looking for books that enable kids to connect with others, so really create a foundation for building empathy across differences. We're looking for books that help children affirm who they are. So a fancy way of saying that is that we want books that help kids create a positive identity. These are what we generally call mirror books. And then we look for books that help provide kids or give kids an opportunity to learn about histories, cultures, identities with which they may not be familiar. And we call these books window books. We're also finally looking for books that provide kids with strategies for standing up to bullying, to prejudice, help them work through conflict. Too often I think we tell kids, be upstanders, be allies for one another, but we don't tell them what that looks like or feels like. So books enable them to experience some of that, and I think this is true for older kids as well. We want to make sure that our books represent people from all different backgrounds and all different experiences.
There are a lot of ways for kids to learn lessons like this from their parents in a school lesson. The title of this is Books Matter. Why are books an important part of the story here?
Well, I think one of the things that they do, they give kids a way of thinking about and challenging stereotypes, thinking about experiences that may not necessarily be their own, but we want them to be able to think through how others see the world. We want them to be able to talk about differences comfortably, and this is a way of bringing differences into the home. We know so many of our schools, our communities are segregated in the U.S., so this is one way that we enable kids to experience what is not necessarily in their backyard.
And I was looking through the website. All of the books are rated kind of with the age appropriateness level. Can you talk about the progression from books that, you know, clearly it's somebody reading to them up to, you know, through high school when they're reading on their own?
Right. First of all, let me just say that when families are choosing books for their homes, and this is true for educators as well, educators, teachers, families know their kids best. So when we say a book is, say, from appropriate for 4 to 8, we say that, you know, you have to know your own child. So, for instance, if your child is a kid who's prone to anxiety about historical events or about current events, you may not want to read a book that is about slavery or about the Holocaust or something that may cause them particular anxiety. Having said that, what we know is that we know that kids in the early years, so here we're talking about pre-K to first grade, so pre-K to, say, 5 and 6 years old, are beginning to think about differences. They're categorizing. We want to have books that help them think in productive ways about how we are similar to one another and different from one another. We know that they're beginning to generalize, so we want them to have books that help them to address stereotypes. Now, what we encourage families to do is to engage in what we would call active versus passive reading. That means if you have books that, say, are not representative of a variety of cultures, books, say, with all boys in them, we would encourage families to say, hey, what's in this book? What's not in this book? How do you think the book might change if we had more girls involved? So thinking about what's there and what's missing. As kids get older, we want to provide books that give them models for thinking about how you help one another. So again, strategies, how you can make a difference in the world. Then as we move into the older years, and here we're talking about middle school, we're talking about high school, we can have more topic-driven books. So books that are about historical events, books that are about current events, One that everybody is talking about right now because it's in the cinemas also is The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas, which we think is a wonderful book that really gets middle schoolers and high school age kids thinking about current events.
Talking to Laura Trubowitz, she's Education Director for the Anti-Defamation League Midwest. We're talking about the ADL's Book Matters project and website suggesting books on various social justice topics. Laura, you've touched on a couple of the topics that are covered here, the Holocaust, anti-bullying. Can you talk about some more of the range of subjects covered within Books Matter?
Yeah, sure. The scope is quite broad. We have the way that we recommend folks use the list. You can go onto the list, search under education, then you'll see a section that says filter by topic. Some of the topics we include are ability, disability, ableism, gender and sexism, LGBTQI people and homophobia and heterosexism, race and racism, religion, religious bigotry, social justice. So those are the general categories. You can then go in and do more specific searches. So say you're doing a search under bullying awareness and prevention. We then have subcategories. So categories like name-calling and teasing, identity-based bullying, or let's take, for instance, the LGBTQ category. You can then do a sub-search under families, friends, and communities. Homophobia and heterosexism, marriage equality, transgender and gender nonconformity identity. So it gets very, very specific. Every book has an age range. You'll see, say, picture books go from age 3 to 7 or age 0 to 3. So you can do searches on according to age range as well.
And I want to talk about how these can be used as tools in a family. To just take one example, say you've got an all-white family. The parents want to talk about, say, race and African-American history with their kids. They didn't grow up with these books or these conversations. They don't know how to start. Can you talk about using these as maybe that entry point?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think two things to consider. One, we want to think about positive representation. I think too often, especially white families and white educators, have a tendency to bring books into the home about African-American families that are what we would call historical crisis books. That is, books about slavery, books about the civil rights movement. Now, those are important books, but we don't want those to be the only books a family has access to, because the potential consequences of using only historical crisis books is that white kids end up associating African-American children with moments of crisis only. So we say teacher history, wonderful historical book in the civil rights movement, for instance, would be John Lewis's March books. There's a trilogy there which talks about the civil rights movement. But also bring in books like I Like Myself. That's one for early childhood readers, 4 to 8. And it's simply an African-American girl who loves her hair, talks about having bad breath, does things that are absolutely ordinary over the course of a day. So we recommend families bring in books that we would say are not only the extraordinary books, those books about extraordinary historical moments, but also books that are ordinary, so that you normalize families that don't look like you.
That's a way to build, maybe a better way to build empathy, because it might be harder for a kid to have empathy with someone, as you say, going through this extraordinary historical moment. Well, I'm just a normal kid, so you're seeing normal kids just from different backgrounds.
Yeah. Some other books, especially for early childhood readers, we recommend is The Skin You Live In by Michael Tyler. That's for recommended for ages 4 to 8. Thunder Boy Jr., that's by Sherman Alexie, which is also 4 to 8. That one comes with a teacher's guide and a family guide with conversation prompts. It's all about naming. It's about a Native American boy and his struggle to name himself, his thoughts about names. So that's another wonderful book. So, yes, building empathy across our differences. It enables kids to learn how to value people who don't look like them, don't have the same experiences as they do.
You know, what's easy to do is to not talk about race and the other issues you bring up there with kids or sometimes with adults. Can you talk about the consequences if we don't tackle books like these, if we don't have conversations like these?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we know, scholars in early childhood tell us this, is that kids begin to recognize and think about difference from a very, very early age. It's the ways in which they categorize the world. Too often, as adults, we have been taught to ignore our differences, to ignore, in particular, race differences. So what tends to happen is a kid will say, I see this particular physical characteristic that is different than my own, say skin color. And as an adult, especially when that occurs in public spaces, we may go, shh. What that does is that teaches kids, one, that there's something wrong with their observations, and on some level, it also teaches them that the adults in the authority figures in their world are not being truthful with them. They see difference, and we tell them not to see what they're seeing. Let me give you one particular example. I'll take it from my own experiences with my daughter. We were at an event. I'm a white parent. We were at an event in a community that was predominantly African American, watching acrobats. And she noticed, she was probably 5 or 6. She turns to me and goes, "Mommy, we're the only white people here." Now, if I were the adult who went, "Shh, don't notice that," right away I'm telling her that there is something that she should be ashamed about in terms of her observation. So instead, having read all the wonderful books that we have on our list, I said to her, "That's true, sweetheart." Seemed for a moment that she didn't have any other questions, but I probed a little further and I said, "Do you have any thoughts about that or any questions?" She said no. So in that moment, all I was doing was validating what she saw. And I think it's important as adults that we validate what our kids naturally see and observe. To observe race is not to make you a racist, does not make you a racist.
It's a good place to leave it. Laura, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Rob.
That was Laura Trubowitz, Education Director for the Anti-Defamation League Midwest. She joined us to talk about the ADL's Books Matter project. You can find a list of their recommended social justice books for kids on their website, adl.org. Coming up after the news, WPR Director Mike Crane joins us for Mondays with Mike. We'll get the latest on Wisconsin Public Radio programming and operations and take your questions, comments, and concerns about all things WPR. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the state legislature is getting ready to take up a number of pieces of legislation that would limit the power of incoming Governor Tony Evers. We'll preview tomorrow's special session and look at the reactions from both sides of the aisle. Right now, it's the first Monday of the month, which means it's time for another edition of Mondays with Mike. Each month, Wisconsin Public Radio Director Mike Crane or Content Director Mike Arnold stops by Central Time or The Morning Show to discuss the latest on WPR programming and operations. Mike Crane with us today. Got a lot of ground to cover, including some new on-air voices, special holiday programming, and a pledge drive that kicks off tomorrow. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for Mike? What do you want to hear more or less of? Is there a particular show or type of show you'd like to hear on Wisconsin Public Radio? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Mike, welcome back to the show.
As always, good to be here, Rob.
Well, a couple few new voices and returning voices here at WPR. Tell us about a few of them.
Sure. So first of all, in our newscast, you'll certainly begin hearing Corey Hess, who's just joined us in our Milwaukee office, and she'll be reporting on issues affecting our state's largest city. She comes to us with over 10 years of reporting experience and has won a number of awards, including from the Milwaukee Press Club and the Wisconsin Newspapers Association. So we're really glad to have Corey on board.
And then a new fill-in host. This is one of my old jobs, actually.
That's right. Darrell Connor has just started as our new fill-in host, and he comes to us with 13 years of experience hosting talk shows in Madison and Milwaukee. He started radio in 2005 when he was one of the winners of a sports talk radio contest. And the prize was a weekly sports talk show for a year, and he did very well, obviously. And he said that he's looking forward to learning more and building his future with WPR. So we'll hear him soon.
And finally, a return to the morning airwaves, now permanently, Kate Archer Kent.
That's right. It's just a thrill to know that actually this morning, Kate started her very first shift as the permanent host,
yeah.
Although you're very familiar with the mornings, Kate.
It was fun. It was just that little bit of deja vu, like, oh, wait, yeah, I remember how to do this.
And
yeah.
Kate is here with us. She actually never got up. She forgot that after the show is over, she can get up and leave the studio, but she's still here. So.
I'm still here. And you know what, Rob, you will now once again turn into my afternoon alarm clock, because when I hear you starting to read through your show, I know that I have to run for the
You have
exits.
To get out of the building.
I gotta get out of the building.
Right. I mean, right now it's basically about your bedtime, right?
Oh, come on. Well, you know, I'm pushing it. I'm pushing it here. So, no, I'm really so excited to be back on the morning show. Love mornings, and just a really great team, so much energy. They were all here this morning, and it was just like, the gang's all here. Let's make some great radio.
Yeah, well, and you know, a lot of people that don't know about radio people think, oh, why would you want to get up in the morning? But besides being a morning person yourself, it is a great radio shift, because you're waking people up and being a part of their day.
Huge service. It's a great time to really help formulate what we're going to be thinking about for the day, and helping people just get off to a great start.
Yeah. And yeah, if you work that early shift, I remember as a producer, matinees. You know, you could be the only person in a theater at 2:30 sometimes.
Yeah, you can have a whole new vantage point of mid to late afternoon.
Well, now, before we let you leave for the day, Kate, thoughts on the future of the morning show now that you are permanently in the driver's seat there?
Well, every day is unfolding into just a great conversation. We're going to be touching lots of different areas. And tomorrow, for instance, looking at the Danish word hygge and the origins of it. So you never know where you're going to go on the morning show, and it's going to be a fabulous journey.
And whether Wisconsin's hygge. I was reading the promo for that already.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes, yes, we have some hygge going on here.
Yeah. Okay, I'm still not entirely clear on what it means. So
it's
sort of like
gemütlichkeit,
cozy, comfort, a feeling of home, kind of like your Wisconsin Public Radio.
Hey, hey.
Yeah.
All right, Kate, we'll let you get home. Thanks for stopping by, and have fun the rest
you.
Of the week.
Appreciate it.
Kate Archer-Kent, now morning show host. You return to the airwaves this morning as we talk to Mike Crane, WPR director. It's Mondays with Mike. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions. Staying on the topic of the morning show, Mike, a lot of people issuing big and well-deserved thank yous to Mr. John Munson.
That's right. You know, John just really stepped in at a time where he was suddenly needed. And being John, he just rolled with the punches. And just a little one I want to read from the email that was sent out by Keely, the producer of the morning show, about John. And she said, I want to thank John for his commitment to this role. John sauntered into the Superior studio just one day before our fall pledge drive, and he's rolled with everything we've thrown at him. And Keely also wants to say thank you to the WPR Superior staff for accommodating John's doing that each and every morning. One of the things I love is that the team that has built WPR, the engineers at the university and at the ECB, have made it possible for John to do that, and we can do our hosting from pretty much anywhere now, and that's anywhere meaning our studios,
right?
Not yet John's basement on a regular basis, but that may come. But thank you to the all of the team and the morning team for figuring things out while we were searching and ending up picking Kate. So it was a really wonderful and incredibly hardworking time.
So you mean I could commute to Superior and host from John's basement in the future?
If you like, yes.
Living the dream.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's bring on our callers now at 800-642-1234. We've got Sean on the line in La Crosse. Sean, hi.
Hey, I got a question. Throughout the course of the week, you know how you kind of replay the same program a couple of times a day? I was just wondering why some of the programs like Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from the weekends aren't replayed during the weekdays.
That's a really good question. I think basically the thinking has been that the weekend programs are sort of a break from the sort of the grind of the week. And Now I know why you want to have it during the week, too. But they have been thought of as a break. And then in the case of Wait, Wait! Specifically, it's a timely show that the humor, even a few days later, might not be as relevant as it was on the weekend. And in fact, this is one of the challenges some people don't know. They usually record the show on Thursday.
Oh, really? So, I didn't know that.
So they have to kind of guess at what the news is going to still be by Saturday morning. And they usually get it right. And I'm sure once in a while there's an, oh, my God, we have to edit it kind of a thing at the end.
Yeah, but nothing ever happens on Fridays.
No.
Sean, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Well, we've got that special weekend programming, Mike, and we've got some special holiday seasonal programming, both on the Ideas Network here and on our NPR News and classical music networks. Tell us about some of what we've got going
sure. on. Sure. You know, this is just, as with so many people, a favorite time of year, and we get to share some really fun broadcasts. One that we're running here on the Ideas Network on Christmas Eve, Tinsel Tales. It's even more WPR or NPR Christmas favorites, and then that'll be 3 is going to be at 6 o'clock, and at 7 o'clock, Tinsel Tales 4. It's stories of the season. Some are funny, some are touching or insightful, and a lot of good. The one that's really probably the most fun on the Ideas Network, though, is probably Santa Claus coming in for the Larry Mueller Show. And that's Christmas Eve at 11 a.m. And we invite kids to call in and talk about what's on their wish list and maybe leave a hint or two about what kind of treat that Santa could leave for what would his reindeer like to eat this year. And so that's Santa Claus on the Larry Mueller Show. Simply Folk will have a special. We got the Capitol Steps, Politics Take a Holiday, and a whole bunch on the other network, too, including carols with the Eau Claire Master Singers on December 2nd. And this should be a real favorite, Christmas Eve, 1 o'clock, Christmas with the Morehouse and Spelman Glee Clubs. There's a lot more than we can tell you in this brief time. WPR.org/holidays, and you'll find the entire listing.
Let's go back to our callers now. We have Wayne on the line in Marshfield. Wayne, hi.
Hi. I want to say thank you that 6 to 12 months ago I called and said there was no good way for non-internet people to contact WPR. And within a week or two, there was a phone number listed and an address to send a postcard and so on. And I really appreciated that. Another thing, 6 to 12 months ago, somebody mentioned about the volume of the musical interludes. And after that, they increased. And I think they've increased too much because I can have the volume set for voice, and all of a sudden there's a musical interlude both on WPR and on NPR that blasts your ears off and is kind of quite irritating. So I don't know how easy it is to regulate those things, but those are my two comments.
Well, great. Thanks, Wayne. On the second one, there is some regulation of the musical interludes, as you call them, that we can do with the way we control our transmitters and the audio control board here in the studio. But it is absolutely an art to get it just right. And one of the things that certainly has changed over the years for all of public radio is we make a lot more use of, we call them music beds, than we used to. And sometimes that works perfectly, sometimes not. And you know, I don't know about your particular situation, Wayne. We do know that many times as people age, they find in general that the music beds and things, we've heard this over the years, make things harder to hear. And so it's a good reminder for us that when we use those music beds, we should be very sensitive to making sure that the voices are heard really clearly and that they shouldn't get too loud, period, that they should be a part of the sound of WPR, not an intrusion. So we'll keep at it. And also glad to know we're doing a better job of letting people know how to call us or send us a letter, because some people still like to do that. And I tell you, when we get an actual letter on paper, it's a big deal here because not that many people do that anymore.
Wayne, thanks a lot. Look forward to reading from you in the future. This is the December edition of Mondays with Mike with WPR director Mike Crane. We're talking about all things WPR, including some new on-air staff, special holiday programming, and more. And we're taking your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about what we do here at Wisconsin Public Radio? Is there something you want to hear more of or less of? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe answer your question, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. It's the first Monday of the month, so we're talking with WPR Director Mike Crane about the latest happenings at WPR. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question, comment, or suggestion for us at Wisconsin Public Radio? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Back to your calls now. Jan is with us in Viroqua. Jan, hi.
I feel very fortunate where I am. I can get both Wisconsin Public Radio and Minnesota Public Radio. And I hope you see that as an advantage as well. And I'm curious, on Saturday mornings, you run Milk Street Radio opposite the Splendid Table. And those are both programs that I would very much like to hear and attend to schedule myself around. So what would be the possibility of not playing them simultaneously?
Well, you've described what I might refer to as the Manhattan Project, thinking of the old secret project that around World War II to figure out, because in different parts of the state, we are competing or broadcasting alongside different stations. And so figuring out a way that we could get it exactly counter to something that Minnesota was doing might mean we didn't have it right for something that UWM in Milwaukee is doing, or around the borders, you know, the Illinois station is different. And we just would find it very difficult to coordinate at that level. Jan, are you by any chance a podcast listener at all? Is that something you can do to make sure you listen to both, or is that not possible?
I could consider that, and I've been known to archive one of those two shows.
Oh, that's terrific. And I always hate to say listen to the other station for a while, so I'll say it this way: listen to WPR, but then listen to the podcast of Splendid Table. But thanks for asking it. It just really is difficult for us to figure out how we'd get that right in every different situation.
Jan, thanks a lot for calling in and bringing that up. Rick is with us next in Belleville. Rick, hi.
Hey, thanks, Rob. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks.
Mike, I have a question. Is it hard for you to find good Wisconsin radio talent to put on the station? Because I think a lot of us in Wisconsin really enjoy some of the local talent. Of course, Larry Mueller, and for years, Kathleen Dunn and others. Some of us even miss Michael Feldman a little bit. But is that a hard task for you to find that? And programs like Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, I know Michael kind of competed with that for a while. Would it be possible to find the kind of talent that could put on such a kind of a specialized show like that? Because it seems like there's a market for it, and we sure enjoy the Wisconsin products. And even Judith Sears-Posad, even though I think she's from Chicago, she's adopted Wisconsin pretty heavily, so I think we can accept her too. So,
well, you know, it's funny. It's a great question, and I would say in general it's just hard work to find great talent, period, and that's why we work so hard at it. And sometimes it can be hard to actually know where someone's from. Like, I get a funny thing. I'm actually a native New Yorker, and I can talk like that if I need to. But because I've been in broadcasting all these years, I'll have people think I'm from the Midwest, but probably not the state they're in. So I don't sound like I'm necessarily from Wisconsin, but do I get a pass at 11 years? You know, and that kind of thing is tough to figure out. But I'm thinking, for instance, that at least in his recent past, that Darrell Conner is a Wisconsinite. And I think Kate's been here long enough for her to claim at least a little credit for that. And that's the challenge there. The show like Michael Feldman, that truly is, that's one of those amazing talents that arises once in a while. You look for it all the time. But it can be hard to find.
Thanks. And I think Rick is also getting at locally produced versus bringing in a national show.
Well, that's right. And we're always going to have a tension around that because, you know, like we now have 1A, which is the show that replaced the Diane Rehm show a while ago. And people always asked on the Mondays with Mike segment, why can't you have the Diane Rehm Show. And so there's always a, the way we think of it is our role is a dual role, which is to bring Wisconsin to the world and to bring the world to Wisconsin. And so we'll always be a little back and forth on that.
Rick, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Mike Crane is with us, WPR director, answering your questions, bringing you news from behind the scenes. Joe is with us next in North Freedom. Joe, hi.
Hi, fellas. We recently returned from 14 mildly depressing years in Indiana, and I really missed the WPR original program, especially things like Larry Miller, as was mentioned earlier. And I missed Science Friday, frankly, down there, too. But I wonder if a lot of people in Wisconsin even know that 1A does a Friday wrap-up, the first hour being national and the second being international of the news events of the week. And then do you do that in the evenings? Because I'm not an evening listener. So I actually tune into WFYI online and have to miss part of Science Friday. But have you ever considered changing the time slot of 1A to better do that?
Well, in fact, 1A is, and I don't know about WFYI and what their offerings are, but 1A is actually broadcast originally at 9 a.m. Our time, 10 a.m. Eastern. And so it competes with On Point, and we had... once 1A became an offering, we're like, okay, what do we do? So 1A is already on a delay for us. And one of the things that we asked them early on is if we're broadcasting it at 1 o'clock Central and it needs to be updated, will you be doing that? And they said absolutely yes, because they were really excited to be on in Wisconsin with its big audience. And so I hadn't thought about rebroadcasting the roundup in the evening. That's an interesting idea, although no matter what we do, if we're putting one thing on, we're taking something else off. And I thought, Joe, it was funny that you missed the Science Friday when you're in Indiana, but now you're missing the 1A segment, and those are hard decisions, aren't they? Joe, I'm glad you can listen online as well.
Joe, thanks for the call. Shelley is with us next in Madison. Shelley, hi.
Hi. My call is very brief. I'm calling to say I love WPR. Like some of the other people, I travel quite a bit, and boy, when you come back and you get WPR, you recognize what you have missed when you've been someplace else. So I love WPR. The other thing I said to the person was that I am sorry I am not very, very, very wealthy, because I would love to donate so much to public radio, because it's such an important part of not only my life, but my husband's life and so many of my family. So thank you so much. I was trying to think, when people are talking about their favorite programs, I thought, better not go down that road, because it might take quite a while.
All right, Shelley, thank you so much. That's lovely. And a bit of a segue, Mike.
Yeah.
We've got a pledge drive coming up.
We do. And, you know, the thing we hear during the pledge drives all the time is related to what Shelley just said, which is we hear the word love. And many times when I've been on the Mondays with Mike segment, I've mentioned the StoryCorps idea that listening is an act of love. And so that's certainly, it goes both ways, that part of what's the magical thing about public radio is that we're listening to each other. And in fact, I had the pleasure of sitting next to NPR's president for operations, Lauren Mayer, a few weeks ago, and she said something. I was like, wait a minute, I have to write that down, because it was such a really great point. She said, we believe that listening changes the world, and that is our business.
Oh, fantastic.
So thank you for listening. Thank you for telling us what you think, Shelley, and everybody that will do that during the pledge drive as well. Wealthy or not, we'd love to have your support.
Thanks so much. Just a quick note, along with the pledge drive, we have some canvassers around the state. A brief mention on that, because I guess we had some questions about that, Mike.
Yeah, that's right. People maybe don't realize this, but particularly in the southeast Wisconsin area where things are, and south central where it's a bigger population, we've been doing our canvassing where young people come to the door and ask people to support WPR. We've gained nearly 4,000 contributors during that time, and that includes 1,300 sustainers. So it's a big deal for us. It helps us keep the pledge drive shorter, of course, and it's a real thing. They're out there in the dark with keeping themselves warm by walking around and thanking people for their support or asking them if they haven't already to go and do that. So that's a real thing, and they'll give you a phone number to call and check on them if you're concerned.
All right, Mike, thanks. As always, good to talk to you.
Great to be here.
That's Mike Crane, director of Wisconsin Public Radio. He stops by the first Monday of each month, either here on Central Time or on the morning show, now with Kate Archer Kent, to talk about the latest on WPR programming and operations. You can always contact us at the Wisconsin Public Radio Facebook page or call Audience Services at 800-747-7444. I believe that's the right number. You can ask your question, make your comment anytime. Again, call in, go on the Ideas Network Facebook page or the WPR Facebook page. Let us know what you think. I don't usually mention birthdays here on Central Time, but this is a big one. One of our neighbors is turning 200 today. On this day in 1818, Illinois was officially welcomed into the Union as the 21st state. That makes Illinois our older sibling. Wisconsin had to wait another 30 years for statehood. Now, here's a fun fact I didn't know. Maybe you knew this. This is reported in the Chicago Tribune. The state historian of Illinois says Chicago was not part of the original application for Illinois statehood. Illinois leaders revised the map to move the border north, in part to get more Lake Michigan coastline, and in part to make sure they got Galena and its valuable lead mines. So you see where this is going. If they hadn't changed that, Chicago would now be part of Wisconsin. Now think about that. We could have two NFL teams, two NBA teams, three Major League Baseball teams, brats and Chicago dogs, donuts and more donuts. I say, is it too late, or is this the time for a bold policymaker to raise the issue again and move that border south? Okay, maybe that's not a great birthday present for Illinois. So, best wishes to our neighbors to the south. You don't look a day over 127. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.